This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Theatre, film, TV and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Hello, Susie Rong.
Hello, Warren. Do you think of your Asian friends as being particularly reserved, like they are a bit less expressive of their emotions?
Are we talking about in or out of the bedroom?
I didn't want to bring that side of it up, but up to you.
I don't know. Maybe. I think so. Yeah, I think overall, I find you have to sort of coach how they're feeling out of them sometimes. I mean, we're speaking generally. Some are the completely opposite, but I suppose, yeah, I think so. I think sometimes you've got to say, hey, you've got to tell me how you're feeling. Otherwise, I don't know, and I interpret the wrong way. I find that happens quite a lot with them.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of, like, why can't you read my mind?
Yeah, that must be a is that a thing, Susie? Because I always have to explain it, and yeah, I like to know where I stand, and I'm very expressive in terms of how I feel, and sometimes I wonder whether that's too much going back to them. But I do find sometimes that they're hard to read, and you have to say, hey, it's okay to tell me. It's good to tell me how you feel. Why is that, Susie?
I think we are, well, obviously this is very, you know, people are different no matter your background. But I do recall that in my sort of upbringing, there is very little emphasis of understanding your feelings. There's very little emphasis of making clear what you are thinking at the moment. Well, we didn't think that it was necessary to learn how to be very explicit about things. And, you know, from moving countries, I noticed that was a big difference. I noticed that when I first moved here, people were very certain about how they felt about things, which I think in by and large is a healthy thing. But sometimes you do feel like, well, you're just ambivalent. And that's fine. And I think that Western culture, people are not very good with ambivalence.
It's funny because as we're talking and you were talking then, I thought, Susie, you're probably the most expressive person that I know. Like, you know where you stand with Susie Rong. I think that's great.
But I've learned to be that way. I think that's something that's benefited myself, you know, to learn exactly what I like and what I don't, and just kind of not be too compliant with things. I think compliance has a lot to do with it. I think Asian cultures tend to have a lot of compliance built into the way we navigate the world, and maybe that translates as being a little bit less expressive.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I've noticed that. I find that and sometimes asking how you feel can almost sometimes I feel a bit almost as though I'm being a bit rude, overstepping the mark. But when it comes to a relationship, you have to know how they're feeling. Otherwise, it all goes funny.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's because a lot of Asian cultures tend to be putting other people first rather than putting yourself first.
That's interesting.
It's like a social cohesion emphasis. But that, you know, that is nice in some ways, but it certainly has its drawbacks.
Susie, when you were in Singapore, what happens there in terms of, because it's interesting, when I hear about a lot of relationships that have happened, I suppose, with the parents of my Asian friends over in other countries, often there's sort of like two separate lives being lived, as though there's a lack of, some sort of communication between them, but no one knows about it except the couple. Like, there might be two affairs going on, for example, and no one knows about it but the couple, but they manage everything around them. It's like a show. That's something that I've noticed in a few friends. What's that about?
I think when I return to Singapore, people probably regard me as half Western. since I've been away for so long. So I think a lot of the normal kind of social expectations, maybe they kind of expect less of those things from me. And I think I also find myself kind of snapping back to Singapore in ways quite easily.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Which is why I get a little bit worried about spending too much time there.
Oh, do you, I can't imagine Susie Wrong changing now. I feel like, you know, you're too Susie
it's
Wrong.
It's really easy. Like, I'm there for a week and I find like, this is normal now. Yeah.
Now, Susie, a couple of messages came in. Shane from Wodonga says, I have an idea for a talk topic. What about black or blue pens? What do you prefer? Do you know who that is? Remember Dee Mason?
Black or blue pens? Hi, Dee.
We always had this thing running where if we ran out of content, we'd say, what should we talk about? Well, let's talk about black pens versus blue pens. That was our default joke. This one here saying, yay, Susie took my suggestion, Shane from Wodonga, and that is because today we're talking about Netflix's Love is a Poison, which was Shane's suggestion. Susie, tell us what you thought of it.
The story begins where Legal Eagle Rio fires his 99th partner at work. Quite mysteriously that same evening, Haruto appears at a bar and promptly becomes partner 100. Proving himself far more competent than all previous candidates, Haruto ingratiates himself into Rio's world in ways that go beyond the professional. You see, Rio is known as a cold and merciless ice king of the law, and Haruto has cast a romantic spell on the model of Japanese efficiency, turning Rio from robotic attorney to something more human, which is why this 12-part series on Netflix is called Love is a Poison, reflecting Rio's experience of an external force infiltrating his obstinate ways and changing him forever. In a moment of passion, we hear Rio say that it's his first time, but it is unclear whether it is his first time with a man or that he had been a complete virgin until meeting Haruto. Love is a Poison comprises 20-minute episodes that chart the development of this love story, along with a string of law cases that add considerably to the drama. The first half of the series is comedic and very light, but things take a slightly darker turn when we start to learn about the truth behind Haruto's identity. I found Love is a Poison to be a bit too clean-cut innocent for my liking. It often feels somewhat juvenile in its renderings of lust and romance. The two lead characters are slightly quirky, which is a plus, but there is a lack of depth in how they are being portrayed that makes me feel like I don't really care very much about them. There are, however, a couple of delicious twists and turns in the plot that improves the viewing experience, and the cliffhanger at the end certainly makes me want to see how the next season is going to pan out if it indeed returns to our screens. I do identify a little bit with Rio's frostiness, and watching him gradually opening up and receiving love is interesting, but Haruto's chirpy enthusiasm does absolutely nothing for me. Warren, do you find these men appealing?
Look, to be honest with you, I find I was getting a bit frustrated. There's no intimacy. I didn't see much intimacy, and I thought, is this a Japanese thing in terms of the show where, you know, they've got this gay couple, but they can't show intimacy? I don't know. But then we had that. Remember that reality TV show from Japan?
Yeah.
I mean, at least there were kisses on that. But this one, I just felt like it was, I don't know, a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? You said juvenile. I think it just lacked some emotion for me. He was very cold, the lawyer, and that kind of was, for me, that was easy. That was easy to see and easy to play. They just lacked this connection. And I think I lost it in the first episode with the camping scene when it was on the side of the road. I don't know if that was meant to be funny or not, but it was literally on the side of a road. It wasn't in the bush or anything. And he'd set up this tent. I like the idea, though. I like the idea of a sort of scam artist being used to help solve law crimes and also being a partner in a relationship. But it just lacked that emotion for me. It didn't hook me in, put it that way.
Yeah, I think the concept is pretty good, but the execution wasn't great. Mm. The good thing about Japanese TV is they've got such a long history of television making. It does look good. It looks
great.
Polished and it looks expensive. Mm. Yeah, there is a nice sort of shine, a brilliance to the imagery. The sound is great as well. Mm. But it's all a little bit cold and empty, even though the lead character is meant to be cold. You never really feel very drawn into the story. And like I said, I don't care very much about them. But because the episodes were short, you almost got to a cliffhanger really quick. Yeah. Like they always ended with a big cliffhanger. So that kind of keeps you in. And obviously we don't really know what the culture, I don't really know what the culture like is in Japan in terms of a gay representation on the screens. Maybe because it's in its early stages. Maybe that's why they have some restrictions, or maybe they just don't really know how to tell those stories in a more sophisticated or more engaging way. Maybe this is just a place where we start and hopefully we go somewhere better.
We're chatting to Susie Rong. We're talking about Love is a Poison, which you can catch on Netflix at the moment. Something that seemed really odd to me is, like, you've got the romance. It was so rushed. It was, I don't know, it happened so quickly. There was no chemistry between them. Like, I didn't see any chemistry. Yeah. And that made me feel like it was just a little bit fake. I don't know. I wasn't a big fan. I'd watch it doing the dishes, though.
Well, that's because you understand Japanese a little bit.
Mm, yes, I do, yes. Well, my ex was Japanese, so I learned a little bit.
My eyes had to be stuck to the screen reading every word. I couldn't look at my phone, which was really frustrating.
And it is hard because it wasn't an English version of it either, you know, with the language over the top. But
yeah.
Nevertheless, look, not bad, but watch it for a bit of entertainment. You know, it was good seeing Tokyo, some scenes of Tokyo, but the Japanese bush by the side of the road, don't know about that.
It feels a bit like a comic book, don't you think?
Yeah.
Like, the emotions are so kind of flat and the emotions are so simple. Mm. Like, you're either cold or you're not cold. There's not a lot of nuance there. So it does feel a bit like looking at, maybe that's what they call a manga type of story. I'm not sure. I'm not big into Japanese culture in that way, but maybe it is referencing Japanese comic books or something.
Susie, what did you think of the opening episode, for example? There's this relationship with the plants that, and the plants, as the, so, the, so this guy goes in and he starts sort of talking to his plants and things, but you hear this little squeak as though they're talking back. Did you hear that?
Yeah, the little small succulents.
Yeah, the small succulents.
I just thought maybe it's just Japanese film language that I'm not familiar with. Maybe if you watch a lot of Japanese TV, it's part of that milieu, you know?
Maybe it is. Maybe we just don't know. We'll have to watch some more. Susie, it is called Netflix's Love is a Poison. What are we watching for next week?
Elliot Page is one of our few trans movie stars, and I'm curious to see what he does in the movie Close to You, in which a trans man returns home for the first time after transitioning. You can watch Close to You for free on Tubi before I see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.